Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, listen, by the way, if you find yourself getting outside of our overly broad range here at WVNN on the AM, FM sides, just know that no matter where you are, you can still tune us in. All you got to do is go to our website on any device, even on your phone. Go to rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. Click on Listen Live, and I say it every day, but wherever you is, there we is. That's how it goes. So that explains why we got so many listeners in so many places that are way outside of the usual listening area here, and that followership is really been one of the unique attributes of this show and part of what makes us successful, and we appreciate you, every one of you, inside the usual range and outside the usual range. Hey, by the way, before I get into my topic of the day, and copper that that extra audio clip that I sent you, you got that ready? You good to go on that? Okay, great. So, breaking news. This just reported WBRC 6 out of Birmingham. A source is telling WBRC that Alabama Senate candidate Linda Blanchard, you recall she's running for U.S. Senate, is planning to run for governor of Alabama. So she... it's ramping up somewhat. It's been rumored for a while that she was considering a change in her race. And I'll be honest with you, I got mixed feelings on that. I do believe that Kay Ivey deserves to be challenged. I don't believe that pretty much anyone should get a pass, per se. But nonetheless, some of the policy decisions that have come out of the governor's office in the last 2 years, despite the fact that I know Governor Ivey personally, I do believe that she deserves at least to be challenged in such a way that she has to answer for those things on the campaign trail. That being said, Linda Blanchard has said she wants to be a U.S. senator. Now suddenly she's willing to leave the whole federal side of politics and come back into state politics to run for governor. I don't know her background in that regard. I know she was a U.S. ambassador to Slovenia under President Trump, which I think was largely ceremonial, if nothing else. But I don't know for a fact that she's ever truly had to run a major organization. So I'll be digging into that, because to me, executive experience in politics should involve having some measure of executive experience outside of politics. And I don't know that she has that, but we'll find out. So Linda Blanchard, considering running for the position of governor of Alabama against Kay Ivey. More to come. All right, so I've been talking about principles, talking about caucusing, talking about having a handbook for how you do things. So the Freedom Caucus, we're going to talk about them a bit over the next 30 minutes, and then with a friend of mine, Andy Roth, who was with Club for Growth and is now helping Freedom Caucuses to form at state levels. But that being said, what is this group? Well, this morning I found an audio clip as I was preparing for the show. It just happened to pop up on my Twitter feed. I wasn't even really looking for it, but it was a guy named Congressman Chip Roy from Texas. I've become a fan of Chip Roy. And when he speaks here, is you're gonna play this clip for me, Copper. When he speaks, you're gonna hear the kind of things that Freedom Caucus guys not just say, but they pursue heartily on the floor of the House and the Senate. So that being said, take about a minute and a half listen to Congressman Chip Roy as an intro to what it's like when you have a group of guys get together that stand on conservative principles. Copper, hit that clip.
Gentleman from Texas is recognized.
I thank the Speaker. I thank the gentleman. There's a lot of noise in this town right now about government shutdowns. The fact of the matter is, the issue isn't about shutdowns. It's about whether or not members of this body will continue to use money we don't have to fund mandates, indoctrination, and the use of force against our citizens. $73.5 billion for the Department of Education that subsidizes the indoctrination of our children with critical race theory and woke gender ideologies. $10 billion for an FBI that was just used by the Attorney General of the United States to target parents. $50 billion for a Department of Homeland Security that leaves our borders wide open, empowering cartels because Secretary Mayorkas fails to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. $6 billion for the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, run by Fauci, Dr. Fauci. Need I say more? $592 million for OSHA, which has imposed an unconstitutional vaccine mandate on 84 million Americans. I offered an amendment to strip any funding from this bill that would fund federal vaccine mandates, and it wasn't even able to see the light of day. The issue is a Congress that is supposed to use the power of the purse, our Article I authority, rather than hiding behind the judges of Article III to check the executive branch. We have a moral obligation to give voice and representation to the people who elected us, whose liberty and livelihoods are being attacked. My friend who battles MS is looking to be terminated from the university she teaches at because of the unlawful federal contractor mandate. The medical hero in Texas who is 9 months pregnant facing termination under the unlawful CMS mandate. The military personnel, including the 13-year Army veteran in my district, concerned about myocarditis, facing being discharged from service of his country. These are our neighbors, our relatives, our friends. Maybe not for some of you who go home to double-masked people driving by themselves in vacant vaccine passport cities, but these are real Americans that this government wants to go after. I urge my colleagues to stop empowering the executive branch, tyranny over Americans, and I urge my Republican colleagues to not just vote no and give a speech, but go stand with Mike Lee. Go stand with senators and others in the Senate trying to defend these Americans. We should not fund tyranny over the American citizens. I yield back.
Gentlemen from...
If that didn't fire you up, I don't know what will. If that didn't fire you up, I do not know what will. If that didn't fire you up, I am concerned about whether or not you truly want to see conservative change brought to D.C. I mean, that. God bless Chip Roy, but Chip Roy's not alone. See, the interesting thing is he's not just a single person who goes to the microphone and does the best he can. You know, he's not. He's not the solo practitioner lawyer in the courtroom acting on behalf of his client. He is a member of a caucus, and that caucus stands together like that on a pretty regular basis. That caucus has made some waves in D.C., partly because they're willing to do so. That's just it. They are willing to do, not just to say. It's not enough to have rhetoric. You've got to have action to accompany it, or it's just hollow words. And so to have a caucus that is guided by a set of principles that lends itself more readily to conservatism. And when I say conservatism, I don't mean Republicans, I mean conservatives. Because this group of guys and ladies get together on a regular basis and they work within themselves to determine how best they can attack the issues on behalf of conservative principles under which they said they would run and act. So folks, I'm just telling you, it's so refreshing. When I heard that this morning, and just heard it again just now, I was like, I was sitting here just getting fired up. I want to go to D.C. I want to do something. Give me the microphone. I got to say more. I mean, what else can we do? If that's not a rallying cry right there, I don't know what is. And by the way, that speech was given yesterday. That's not something I pulled out of archives that go back years and years, and we wish that there was some. That was yesterday on the floor of the House. And folks, it happens every day. We don't always get told about it because the media doesn't want you to know that these guys are doing the deal, all right? They're out there doing what they can. And by the way, you are hearing quite a bit about the squad, and you're hearing a lot about the progressive wing of the Democrat Party. There's truly is a caucus called the Progressive Caucus, headed by Congresswoman Jayapal. They're the ones who have been given their own party grief because they want more. They want more. We want more liberal spending. The opposite end of that spectrum is the Freedom Caucus. The ones who believe in constitutional liberties and fiscal responsibility. The ones who believe that if you're going to say something, you better be willing to follow it up. The ones who are willing to have a platform that says, here's who we are and what we stand for, and we're standing together. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back to give you more of an idea of what it means to have a Freedom Caucus as we go forward. News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Yeah, Copper, that was like 3 minutes shorter than usual. It felt like I'm usually running around here in the office getting things done in between breaks, and there was no time to run around on that one. Hey, listen, Copper, go ahead and get clip five ready for me, please. We'll have that one up next. So listen, the Freedom Caucus. All right, what is this group of pokes? Who are these people? Well, okay, so first of all, there's a lot out there to say about them, although they don't necessarily have a website. They don't. I mean, they've got a Twitter feed. You can follow them. They're out there. But it's not like they are an institutional body, but they are the Freedom Caucus. A caucus meaning they band together, so to speak. Well, the Freedom Caucus that we know of has had, for Alabama, has had Mo Brooks, currently has Congressman Barry Moore, and Congressman Gary Palmer have all been affiliated or are affiliated with the Freedom Caucus. That said, looking at the write-ups on them, I will tell you this, they have no fans on the liberal side, and I'm okay with that, but they have no fans on the liberal side, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in just a minute, just a snarky article that I pulled that just basically, they can't stand them. I guess truth be told, the Freedom Caucus is to liberals and progressives the same way we feel about AOC and Ilhan Omar and that group. All right, they are known as being the more conservative, the more right side, if you will. Oh, I like that pun. The more right side of Republican politics. And in D.C., they are the ones that are typically pushing for things that are, more conservative in their appeal. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. So Pew Research Center, a piece that I'm looking at right now, this was written in 2015, all right? Because the Freedom Caucus is not that old. It's been around since 2015. They sprung out of the Tea Party movement. The Pew Research Center confirmed the identities of what they believe were 36 caucus members based upon their public statements. And ideologically, they agree the members of the Freedom Caucus are among the most conservative of House Republicans. And they go on to say, too, that the interesting bit of the demographics, at least in 2015, was that Freedom Caucus members typically have spent less time serving in the House than non-members. I'm okay with that. And of the identified members at the time this article was written, 72% of them had been elected in 2010 or later. So 72% of them have not been up there but for a few terms. And that's good. That's fine. You know, it doesn't mean, I mean, seniority does mean something. And in D.C., I'll be honest with you, when it comes to things like committee chairmanships and all that, seniority does mean something. And I get it. There's institutional knowledge that helps. When I was in Montgomery, I can just tell you it's the same way there. There are times when having that institutional knowledge and that understanding of procedure certainly comes in more than handy. It winds up making you more effective. But anyone can learn procedure. Anyone can earn seniority just simply hanging around. I mean, I've seen folks move to committee chairmanships. You're like, the only reason why you got that is you hung around long enough. And it's not the right criteria for selecting who is best for the job. Well, Freedom Caucus members are often known by Pew here to be a bit younger, not much, but with an average age of roughly 54. The average age apparently in Congress is roughly 56. So they're a tad younger. And interestingly, but not necessarily ideologically, but interestingly, they seem to be somewhat more likely to come from the South. 56% of their membership tends to come from the South. I'm okay with that too. All right, they just to give you some more background to kind of help frame where we're going with all this, the group typically is seen as having sprung from the Tea Party movement. And they tend to be having a far more declared aim of pushing their own House GOP leadership to the right on fiscal and social issues. All right, so when it comes to things like budgets, or the lack of budgets for that matter, when it comes to things like deficit spending, when it comes to things like, how about a giant $1.75 trillion social spending melee that they've got in D.C. right now, this is the group leading the charge to not allow that to happen. This is the group, too, by the way, that even yesterday, was pushing to, you heard Chip Roy a moment ago, was pushing to defund the ability to have vaccine mandates, and yet you had, daggum, 20 Republicans who voted against the measure and allowed this thing to go forward. So there was an opportunity there. Well, at the very least, they pushed it, all right, defunding vaccine mandates. But at the same time, you know, one of the things they point out, and I'll play a clip by Congressman Andy Biggs, who most recently has been the caucus chair. They've got a new caucus chair now. Congressman Perry, I believe it is coming in. But Congressman Andy Biggs, solid dude. I think he's from Arizona, if I'm not mistaken. But Biggs was talking in a clip that I've got here that we're going to play in 1 minute, that literally, you look at government shutdowns. Okay, government shutdowns. What does that really mean? Because they've already put things in place that guarantees that government employees will get paid or at the very least back paid. Is that uncomfortable? Yes, it is. But there is no government employee that will not be paid. And I know that's hard for me to say that, knowing how well this audience leans on the defense industry and Redstone Arsenal and all. And I've got family members in the military, and I myself have served. All that's it's difficult. It never should be like this. By the way, it never should be like this. They should have already passed a freaking budget. The very idea, if you're not aware, by the way, in Alabama, at the state level, we're one of the few states that has a balanced budget requirement every year. Yay! In D.C., no. What they continue to do is not pass a budget. They pass what's called a CR, a continuing resolution. It's basically like saying, okay, we're not going to get that budget passed right now, so we'll just authorize current spending to continue until this date. And so as of yesterday, another continuing resolution. And, you know, I heard somebody say, and it may have been Biggs again, last night on Tucker, the Democrats are willing to trash the economy by shutting things down. They're willing to see millions of people lose their jobs through vaccine mandates that are a constitutional overreach in and of themselves. But if you go so far as 14 hours into a so-called government shutdown, they have a complete freakout. But folks, we're going to fund government. But if we don't start getting spending under control, well, the House Freedom Caucus, they're the guys who step in and get concerned. So, Copper, let's do clip five. You got that ready? Let's go ahead and, hit clip five.
That process play itself out?
Because, David, for a couple of reasons. Number one, you've got five different mandates, and those really address two of the five mandates, those court decisions so far. And so you have three areas where you haven't seen any resolution yet. Second thing is, what's happening is we can have a chance to stop this now. And prevent them from codifying this and coming in and overruling any kind of court mandate going forward as well. So you got multiple reasons to keep going right now. And I guess the bottom line is the legislative branch has been ignored here and has to assert itself when the executive branch is engaging in unconstitutional conduct and behavior. And we don't know what the courts are going to do in some of these other areas. And we still don't know what's going to happen when further appeals come, because the administration said they're going to keep appealing this.
But are you at all concerned about getting blamed for another government shutdown, particularly as we look forward to the 2022 midterms?
Well, we always get blamed, as you know, and
that's
and
true.
That's something that we went and changed that after the last time. And so people will continue to get checks. If you're getting a paycheck, if you're on salary and you don't get your check, you get all back pay. So last time we put in measures to protect that. So the notion of a government-wide shutdown is overblown right now, quite frankly, because of the measures we took last time.
Yeah, I got to ask
there,
quickly.
Copper. Go ahead and stop there. So here's what you got there. Did you hear that? What you basically heard there was someone talking about budget processes, but talking about the fact that the dollar signs were not as important as the principles under which they were called to office in the first place. So in this particular case, he was pointing out the fact that we've got vaccine mandates that are completely unconstitutional, that are an overreach by the federal government, that are wearing people's personal lives out right now. And he said, it's our duty, I'm paraphrasing, but it's our duty as congressmen, as members of this body, to do something for our constituents. And if we sit idly by and do nothing, you know, what good are we? And so the only thing they had, the power of the purse, the only thing they could do was try to oppose budgeting that would have allowed those mandates to go forward. Now, they weren't successful, but they were able to slow the process down, I guess is all we got right now. But at the same time, what you heard was there's a group of congressmen and women who are willing to say, on principle, it is more important that we defend the Constitution than it is to be concerned about whether or not government will be funded tomorrow. And he points out, no one's going to miss a check. We already put things in place that ensure that people whose livelihood depends upon a government check, whether it be through benefits or retirement or for a paycheck, They're either going to get paid or get paid back, one or the other, but they're not going to not get paid. At the same time, maybe the IRS could go for a day or two with being closed. Maybe things, you know, in bloated levels of the Department of Public Health or the U.S. Department of Education, maybe they could take a day or three off. I'm just saying. Maybe some of the monies that we spend just to maintain the hiking trails in the national parks could wait for a week while we figure out the constitutional issues. Because what he pointed out there was, on principle, we don't think we can wait for all the court processes to go through when we know we have the power, if the rest of the body will join us, to exercise the power of the purse. House Freedom Caucus, Andy Biggs. Well, liberals don't like these guys. I'm sitting here looking at an article. This came out just in the last few days, out of a periodical called The Intelligencer. I question the name, The Intelligencer. But libs don't like these guys. The snarkiest article I have ever read. I'm sitting here holding it in my hands. I almost want to take a shower after I read this thing. But it literally says, he goes on to talk about the fact that all these guys are just ultra-loyalists to Donald Trump and his eccentric causes. So, okay, you can see how this article starting off. They often are viewed as being the more conservative. Okay. Darn, what an insult that is. But he goes on to point out in this article, some guy named Ed Kilgore, he says, the Freedom Caucus operated as the congressional wing of the rebellious Tea Party movement. The rebellious Tea Party movement. Attacking Barack Obama's legislative agenda day and night. More notably, the Freedom Caucus made life a living hell for House Speaker John Boehner. Okay. Whenever he sought to cooperate with Obama on such basic issues as keeping the federal government open. Well, you just heard Andy Biggs. Did he sound like a nut to you? No. He sounded like somebody who says, principles. The handbook under which we're going to operate says we have to defend the Constitution and take care of our constituents. Yeah. Yeah. So in that respect, he says in this article, this snarky article written by a liberal, in that respect, the Freedom Caucus is simply the leading edge of the revolution that has overtaken the GOP and movement conservatism generally since 2016. Oh, my gosh. What else does he say here? I mean, this is... Oh, my gosh. Okay. Whether or not that threat is made or... Oh, McCarthy, yada, yada. He goes on to say, John Boehner once said the House Freedom Caucus stands for total chaos. By the way, where's John Boehner now? Oh, I think he's out promoting medical marijuana and no longer in office. That's what I recall. Although he did come to Alabama recently and speak at the Business Council of Alabama's annual dinner. All right, Copper. Go ahead and take us to that short break we take right about now. And when we come back from that, I got more on the Freedom Caucus. And coming up top of the hour, I got a guy who knows all these folks super well. Andy Roth. Going to come on and sort of talk us through what it would look like if we could officially see something like Freedom Caucuses forming at the state legislature level. Oh, yeah. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative. Just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 95 FM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Hey, before I go too much further, have you heard the ads for Otter Creek Farm? Because Otter Creek Farm is one more cool kind of place, let me tell you. And it's right here in North Alabama. And I love that. Charlene and I go out there quite often. My friends Frank and Jane own and run the place. And it is known, by the way, internationally. And when I say that, I mean seriously, it is known internationally. We got people that fly in from Europe, Frank told me the other day, to make that a destination spot for wing shooting, for hunting pheasant and quail. But it's also gotten such a reputation for its beauty and its facilities that people are going there for weddings, for big events. They've got a culinary staff that will cook for you like you wouldn't believe. So whether you're there for wing shooting, a wedding, or for having a corporate retreat or just a day off on your own or spend the night, I'm just telling you, Otter Creek Farm, you need to check it out at OtterCreekFarmstead.com. Otter Creek Farmstead. .com. All right, back to the Freedom Caucus. So they are a bit of a thorn in the side, some people would say. I don't see them that way. I mean, I know some of these guys and ladies, and truth be told, people just don't like it when other folks don't do everything they say. All right. I'm sure Nancy Pelosi has her moments with Ilhan Omar and AOC, right? Well, apparently McCarthy, our minority leader right now, Kevin McCarthy in the House, is allegedly having difficulty with them himself. Only because, and it is, by the way, there's often this notion that when you get into leadership, you have to find a way to compromise. Because leadership in politics somehow means you've got to be able to move people to the center and develop the art of compromise. I don't know that that's always true. On matters of principle, like here's the deal. When I went down to Montgomery, there were certain things you could not move me on. If it comes to pro-life, I was pro-life. Don't try and tell me otherwise. If it comes to Second Amendment, I was Second Amendment friendly. Do not try to tell me otherwise. If it comes to matters of military policy, I was military friendly, period. I get it. I was a definite fan and friend of law enforcement when it came to legislation. And there were certain things like that I knew where I stood when I got there. Then when you get down there, you look at things, okay, wait a minute. I'm a little gray on that. I don't know what that is. What about things like, what's an example? What about things like a bill that we passed for insurance to be able to fund treatment for autism? I mean, did you know that it was excluded for a period of time? Well, I was often, very often, aligned with the business community. But in this particular case, the business community and the insurance community especially took a stand saying, we don't want this. But the movement was there that we recognized that they were covering any number of other things. And so at that point, I had to examine it from different sides. How do I feel about telling a privately run business that it needs to provide coverage? Okay, that's an issue for me. But then how do I feel about the fact that we already provide coverage under so many different angles, but yet not under insurance, and that families are going broke trying to take care of their kids? If they buy the policy, couldn't the premium then also be applied to their autistic child? And so I had to examine it using the principles that brought me to Montgomery in the first place. The same is true of the Freedom Caucus guys and ladies. I keep saying guys, but please excuse me. But the reality is McCarthy, he's in charge of the minority right now. And there are some who believe that in 2015, that McCarthy could have been the Speaker of the House, but it was the Freedom Caucus who unraveled that. Okay, we'll see. But right now, McCarthy is doing what he can to keep his own caucus together, and he's got some people in there that are firebrands, but you don't get to D.C. because you're a type B personality, right? I mean, how many congresswomen and men do you know who literally are like type B, laid back, don't get much accomplished in life? I don't know of any. That being said, you got type A personalities, and when they're type A mixed with solid conservative principles, if you're not solid and conservative, you're probably going to hear from them. And so some of the members are the ones who draw a lot of attention, like Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Then you've got others like Mo Brooks. You've got others like Barry Moore. You've got people like Jim Jordan. You got folks like, I'm trying to think of the, I got the list over here. I just threw it on the floor. Where'd it go? Well, anyway, you got some of the ones you would expect to see in there. But folks, I'm just telling you, this House Freedom Caucus, and Copper, go ahead and tell that caller on line five that I'm going to stick with the topic I've got right now. I'm not going to jump off topic for the moment. It is something to see and to watch when you have a group of people that will stand together. Now, why would we want them in our state? Well, I'll tell you why. Because right now in the state of Alabama, we are passing government spending at record levels. We're literally looking at increased revenues year over year in Alabama, and yet when's the last time you saw a tax cut? Yep. When's the last time you saw, once the surpluses really began to come in, that state government decided to give something back? Yep. And I'm just telling you right now, there's been several guys down there, and I've talked to them. At the Policy Institute, we've been discussing the idea of having a conservative policy caucus in Montgomery for the last several years. I've actually had leadership within the legislature ask me not to do it. But I'm just telling you, it's coming. Because after this last session, when medical marijuana got passed, and not because it's marijuana, keep in mind, it's not just because it's marijuana, it's because of the way that bill was structured. That bill raises taxes, grows government, and steps on civil liberties by allowing the new Cannabis Commission to have the opportunity to search and seize property without a warrant. Why would any Republican vote for that bill, and yet they did? And conservatives were beside themselves. And I think the desire to begin seeing a conservative caucus in Montgomery has not only grown, but it's got legs. Well, it appears that a new organization has stood up. And right after the top of the hour, we're going to hear a friend of mine, Andy Roth, who I've known for about a year and a half now. I had an opportunity to go spend some time with him up in D.C. He's a veteran Republican strategist who has been working with Club for Growth Foundation. And Andy Roth is helping to form a State Freedom Caucus network. And it's going to be good. There's going to be, I believe, one of those states is going to be announced sometime in the near future. But it's going to be something to see what happens when you get into the state level, because you hear me talk on the show all the time about how important it is that state legislatures reflect the same principles that we want to see reflected in D.C. Because the states, in my opinion, the states very often more impacts your life out of what comes out of your state capital than it does out of D.C. I know it's hard to believe right now in a world of vaccine mandates and you know, massive bloated government spending and federal overreach. It's hard to believe that's true. But if you think about it, like I said the other day on the show, everything that you deal with and put your hands on somewhere in your community, the state has been involved in some capacity. Can you have Sunday alcohol sales? That has to run through Montgomery. Do you have a certain amount of tax you pay at the pump? A lot of that came from Montgomery. Are you allowed to text and drive? What are the laws you have to abide by? Comes from Montgomery. And then state income tax. How about the fact that we're one of the only states with a sales tax on groceries? All these things come from Montgomery. Do you have enough state troopers on the road? Are the court systems going to run? Do you have your day in court because the court systems are running at a good pace? All these things come from Montgomery. How much asphalt's on the road? Most of that comes from Montgomery. Folks, I'm just telling you, if you have a conservative policy caucus, a freedom caucus, if you will, in your own state capital, the things that could happen to make Alabama more and more of a bastion of freedom. I'm excited about it. I'm real excited about it. I can't wait to hear what Andy has to say and how they're laying this out and what the dreams are for doing this. He and I have just talked about this in the past, and I think it's going to be interesting for you to hear him bring his perspective of having worked at the D.C. level with the Freedom Caucus guys and seen their successes and how we can transition that now to the state legislatures. Because so often, those folks that run for your state legislature also wind up being the ones who later on run for Congress and for the U.S. Senate. It's going to be fun. All right, folks, we'll come back with my friend Andy Roth, formerly of the Club for Growth Foundation, now with the new State Freedom Caucus Network. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back.